Thank you for joining the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Northwestern Division for today's conference call covering test flows from Fort Peck Dam. This call is open to the public to provide information on the status of the test flows in compliance to ensure compliance with the 2018 biological opinion. I'm Eileen Williamson and I will be your moderator. This call is recorded and placed on the Defense Video and Imagery Distribution Service for reuse at www.dvidshub.net/unit/USACE-NWD. Your participation acknowledges your consent to be recorded. All lines should be on mute. To unmute your line and ask a question, press star 6. Force mute function may not work on all phones, so if I ask, please use your phone's own mute function and do not place the call on hold. Today's speakers include John Remus, Chief of the Missouri River Basin Water Management Division, and Joe Bonanno, Manager of the Missouri River Recovery Program. I'll turn the call over to John Remus.
Thank you, Eileen. Thanks, everybody, for dialing in this afternoon. No changes from a water management perspective. Last week, we reached the 8,000 CFS target at Wolf Point. And we're going to be holding that until around the 1st of September. It's an 8,000 CFS average day, a little bit of fluctuation, but not a lot. I don't have anything else to discuss water management wise. I did get an email from Dick Iverson Monday, I believe, with some photos attached with some of a pump site that was no longer functioning. If there are people out there that have that information, we do need that. Hopefully people have been putting that on the HydroViz site, but we do need that information and as much information as you could possibly provide. With that, I'll turn it over to Joe for any comments.
Thanks, John. There's not much new to report. From the physical monitoring efforts, there's nothing new to report. Nothing has changed since the last call. All of the work that was planned to be conducted during the test flows, the first peak or the second peak or both, as I mentioned on the last call, that work was completed. So the aerial photography, the LIDAR, the physical pump site surveys, cultural resource monitoring, the dam safety monitoring, the water quality monitoring, all of that monitoring that was intended to occur during those two peaks, including before them, that work has been done. The monitoring remaining is those same efforts I just mentioned that occur after the test flow is over. So in the coming couple of months, those efforts will be repeated. So there won't be anything new to report on that front for a while. On the fish side, Pat Broughton wasn't available today. As if you recall, if you've been on the last couple calls, the three female pallid sturgeon that are gravid that potentially were waiting to spawn in the Missouri River, they continue to remain in the Missouri River, and as far as the crews know, have not spawned. They've only, the intent was to watch them for a while now because they haven't been moving much. And then here in a week or two, if they move, to recapture them to determine if they spawned. Usually, if they spawn, they spawn and then they head downstream. And so downstream movement could indicate that they spawned, and that if the crews saw that happen, they would recapture those fish. If the fish just continue to sit there, then they'll go recapture them. So one fish did move downstream a bit, and the crews did recapture that fish, and that fish had not spawned. Still in the Missouri, farther downstream, but even though the fish moved downriver some, it had not spawned. So to our knowledge, none of those three females that Pat has been reporting on have spawned. And so it remains to be seen whether they will or not. It's in the past, sometimes those fish would eventually head to the Yellowstone and spawn. Well, that's the fish on the Yellowstone, I think. Not sure there are any remaining spawning to occur. That spawning occurred a couple weeks ago. So these fish still may spawn. It's colder on the Missouri. Water's colder. It potentially takes longer for them to get there, or they may not end up spawning. And goatritic, the crews will figure that out here in the coming weeks. So that's all that is new to report on the fish side, and nothing else from me to report.
All right, thank you, Joe. So we'll just move into the question and answer session, starting with Montana. You can raise your hand, you can type your question in the chat. Okay, nothing seen there. North Dakota. Okay, and I'll just go in alphabetical order by state. Iowa, Kansas, Missouri. Okay, I see a hand up. Dana Berwick, go ahead.
Thank you. So I'm up here in Montana. I had a couple of questions, probably for Joe on the monitoring. One, has there been monitoring done, part of it, as far as the speed of the flow? You know, is it 3 miles an hour or 30 miles an hour during the peak and then now after?
There may have been. I'll have to check. That wasn't, I can't say that there wasn't. I'll check. Do you have a particular area in mind, or?
Well, I guess I'm just thinking more about maybe the drift angle than the recruitment and retention. I know they did the drift study as part of it, but I guess just a observation. I'm sitting at a pump site here right now looking at it, and you know, it seemed like the water was moving pretty fast at 20,000 or whatever we got to, and the culverts engage right now says we're at 7720. And when I look across the end of the sandbar at the main section of the river, it looks to me like it's traveling at the same speed. When we drop below like 82 or 8300 at Culbertson, all these sandbars became exposed again and kind of channelized the river. I mean, I know we're maybe putting the cart before the horse talking about the drift thing a little bit, but it's a pretty big part of it. I guess the other thing, when they flew the river and did the LIDAR and stuff, I'd be curious to know, you know, how many more square acres of water there was versus now. I mean, it's probably 20% sandbar now versus at 8,500, it's probably 2% sandbar, you know, inside the bank. So just things to think about. I brought it up earlier, but as I sit here and look at it, I mean, I'm watching this water is flying by in a little narrow little channel. Now maybe it kind of slows down when it breaks out of a sandbar, but just the channelization of it, the effects that would have on the larval drift, it just maybe something to be thinking about anyway, checking out what we can still check it out versus talking about it this winter.
Dana, yeah. And Joe, this is Tammy with in Williston with West Mary Water Supply. We did a bathymetric survey yesterday, and we also had some data collected, like LIDAR type data, and we had 6 foot loss in sand against our intake. Our last survey showed that we had sand right up against our intake gate, and then our newest survey showed that we were 6 feet lower on sand than we were. And then we also showed a river speed of 2.5 miles per hour yesterday when the divers were in. That's, I don't know how helpful that would be to you, Dana, with us being down in Williston, but we definitely saw some movement in the river, whether it's, you know, attributed to the test flows or not, and the time between the two different bathymetric surveys. But it is interesting to see 6 feet of loss on sand right at the intake and the timing of this. Which we're happy with, by the way. We want the intake to be sand-free. That's a great thing.
Thank you for that additional information. And Dana, did that answer the questions?
Yeah, I don't know if it was even a question, but I guess just information for Joe to think about, or I don't know. I was sitting here and I wanted to get off my chest, so I got that done. So I don't know if Joe had any comments on it or not, but.
Yeah, well, that's helpful. We will have quite a bit to share on your question related to the LIDAR and the changes that occur at different water levels, different discharges. But I'll look into what we have related to discharge versus water velocity. I mean, there's been quite a bit of work done over the years, and it comes down to, like, what's the question being asked? Is it in general, how does velocity change as discharge changes, or is it a very site-specific question? So, you know, we can talk about that more, but there has been a number of efforts in the past that might help answer your question if we dig into what the questions are a little more.
Sure. And I guess I wasn't thinking anything site specific. I was thinking more in terms of it seems like Fraser is the holding spot for these sturgeon up there, or roughly Fraser. I don't remember what the river mile marker number was, but so if that's our number that we're dealing with, and how many days it takes to keep an embryo alive or whatever before they hit the stagnant waters at Sakakawea, I think it's important to think about the channelization of this river. If it gets too low, to me, sitting here looking at it, it looks like it speeds up again. If it's, you know, if it's a little more bank to bank. Now, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe them larvae are stuck in that channelized, the deeper portion of the river anyway, but I would think if it's up and wider, they would have to spread out a little more. I don't know. You know, the other thing I see is when it goes down, there's definitely some backwaters get created too by these sandbars. And I don't know if they find their way out of it, or maybe the backwaters are okay. Maybe they're not hypoxic or whatever, like it is in Sakakawea. I don't have the answer to that, but just general observation, watching logs flow by and stuff. They look pretty fast again now in the main channel. So if that affects how long a larva is at drift or whatever, and their odds of survival, you know, it's worth looking at.
Yep, definitely. Thank you.
Okay, and I see Greg Totsky's got his hand up.
Hey, Joe, I was just curious. Do we know, I know we've got the potential spawning fish on the Missouri main stem. Do we know what the current temperature is if they were to spawn? I know we've had some good data now on how long the embryos would take to develop to motility, but do we know if they were to currently spawn what we'd be looking at for a development time frame on the embryos?
Yes, we do know. We have temperature all the way down the river. I can't tell you sitting here at my desk right now what that is, but we do have temperature data down the river before it's mixed, after it's mixed, on down. So if fish were to spawn, or for the fish that were stocked at 1 day old, we can produce a prediction of what we think would happen and whether or not those fish would survive based on that. And it's, as you allude to, temperature is a big factor.
Yeah, but you don't know currently what the temperature is up there where those fish are.
Not just sitting here, but the information's being collected. I could look it up, probably not while we're here on the phone, but.
No, that's fine. I thought maybe you would know. That's why I was asking.
Nope, sorry. All right, thanks. Don't know. Not ahead. Off the top of my head.
All right, thanks for the question, Greg. I think we were on Nebraska. So really, if there's any others with questions, South Dakota, Wyoming, go ahead, raise your hand or come off mute and go ahead. Any others? All right, John, I'll let you close the call.
We will have another call next week. Just as we get into this kind of steady flow to see how things are working themselves out. Hopefully Pat Broughton can be on the call with a little more fish information one way or the other. After that call, we'll kind of play it by ear to see how things are going along. But we will have another call next week, same time. With that, one last chance for questions. Hearing none. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, everyone.